Police are in the news a lot these days. Way too much. Since the news about police is mostly bad or unacceptable or despicable and sometimes even terrifying. So don't ask me how, because I don't really remember, but I came across a YouTube video with Police Chief Thomas Connolly. And on that 5-minute video, he clearly expressed his own strength-based humility alongside his invitation to the citizens of his town to participate in constructive partnership. It was abundantly clear that Chief Connolly meant every word he said, so I had to invite him to join me in conversation on this podcast because you and I need more good news coming our way these days. I hope you agree with that. The only other time I've spoken with a policeman has been when I've been stopped for the occasional moving violation, not what you would call satisfying conversation. The hour-long conversation you're about to hear was on a whole other level. Police Chief Connolly shares his insights and 40-plus years of experience in ways that help us to appreciate and respect the human side of his very challenging responsibilities, as well as the challenges of appropriately carrying out those responsibilities. He doesn't present himself as perfect or having all the answers, but the answers he does have are definitely worth listening to. Get ready to come away from this episode wishing Police Chief Connolly's approach was the standard rather than the exception for leadership in our country's police departments. And be sure to join the One White Woman podcast Facebook page so you can get the link to Chief Connolly's YouTube video. It's worth listening to. It really is. Oh, and hello. Welcome to the One White Woman podcast. My name is Nene White, and I am one white woman with many questions. And I am so glad you're here to join me in this podcast's Learning Conversations. Welcome, Chief Connolly. I really appreciate your taking the time to have a conversation with me about something that's really got a lot of people worried in this country. So thank you for your time.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, we have a lot to talk about, so we're going to get right into it. Mainly about the negativity about police, that police are getting. And I just, you know, was noodling around on the web and I saw this video that you posted. And you struck me as a man who is very sincere and sincerely concerned about systemic racism and implicit bias. And you acknowledged that it's a real problem in police departments. And I guess the first thing I want to ask is, what motivated you to create that video?
Well, with all the controversy, the bad media, the stories in the newspapers and on the media reference the deaths of black men after interactions with the police, especially the George Floyd incident in Minneapolis.
Right.
We had a group that was started here in Sanford that wanted to have a rally for Black Lives Matter in the city, and they did so, and it was a peaceful rally. It did lead to a march on the police department, which is fine. We facilitated that, and we stopped traffic and helped the marchers who were walking down the street get to the police department. But we did take some precautions for officers who were working because we had been aware, and we watched the news just like everyone else. And
yeah,
we have seen that there had been a lot of violence at some, or actually, I guess you could probably say most of the protests that had taken place. And while those acts of violence were not related necessarily to the Black Lives Matters movement, there were agitators and outside people joining in with the groups, and they were causing violence, and they were doing such things as looting and destroying property and assaulting police. So we did respond what I believe was appropriately, which is officers were wearing protective helmets. So if people did throw something at the officers, at least the head would be protected. And we had some transparent shields to, again, if someone was throwing a projectile, that would be a way to block them. But we took a lot of heat from people because they kept saying that this was a peaceful protest and we don't understand why you were doing that. Yeah. So I decided that one of the things that I could do to make sure people understand that this police department, stands against racism and bias, especially among police officers, but just racism and bias in general, was to make a video and talk to people directly and just tell them that, that I agree with them. I've been doing this for 40 years. And I know that to some degree there is racism and implicit bias in most police departments. So I figured the best way to get the message out was to do a video and put it out on social media.
Yeah.
And then just let people see it and get the conversation going.
Yeah, really good. And I think this brings home again the fact that we have to not put anything into, like police all bad, or, black people all good, or riot, demonstrations all bad or all good. You know, life is textures and dimensions and layers of a mixture of all of those things. And it seems like what you were getting blamed for was protecting yourself against these unknown forces that seem to come in and create problems on purpose for who knows what reason. Is that correct?
Well, yes. And I believe that they were provocateurs and they came in here because they, that not here in Sanford, but at the other larger cities,
right,
that they were using the cover of the protests as a way to put forth their agenda, which is to tear down our society. And but that's not the message that needs to be taken away from this. And, I agree 100% that we need to look inward to all of ourselves and our agencies and understand that everybody, just about every human being, because this is a human condition.
Mm-hmm.
This is not something that affects whites or blacks or other people of color or different ethnicities. Mm-hmm. This is a human condition, which is, hate and bias. I'm not sure any other animal species. I think some of the more intelligent, our closest relatives, maybe with apes, are able to attack each other and sometimes kill each other.
Mm.
But it's very rare that other than human beings that we do these kind of things.
Mm.
And I think that, we just need to have a conversation and we need to talk so that people can realize that everybody else is reasonable and everybody else is a human being that deserves dignity. And to get to the root of the problem and let people know that we are trying to solve the problem. The rhetoric is so fierce now.
Yeah.
That I'm just afraid that it's just going to take perhaps years to get past this.
Yeah.
And that's not going to solve any problem until we can talk calmly and just do things the way that intelligent human beings do it, which is to talk about the problems and make change that's logical and agreeable to everyone and not just one side or the other saying yes or no.
Right.
And that gets us nowhere, unfortunately.
Exactly. And which also makes me think of, the divisions that seem to be purposefully perpetrated in the country right now. And then it's almost like the police are a tool for the people that are setting up the divisions in a way. What do you think about that?
Well, I believe at this particular point in time, there are some people who are using this as a tool to make change because they have lost patience with doing it what I think most people would consider the right way, mm-hmm. which is to identify problems, talk about the problems, develop a solution, and put the solution in place. Mm-hmm. And I would give you the civil rights movements of the 60s. And I've actually heard people on TV now saying that, you know, that there is no place now for peaceful protests anymore, that there has to be violence or else there'll be no change. And I just disagree with that so much because yeah. I'm old enough. I was a child. I was a young child. I was only maybe 10, 11 years old. But I clearly remember 1964, 1965 with the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. And I remember reading and seeing on TV some of the things that were done to the black people who yeah. were marching with Dr. Martin Luther King down south. And I remember just being, even as a child, not even understanding why this was happening. Why are these people doing this? Why is a dog biting that man
right.
who didn't do anything wrong?
Right.
And then you look to see that through that protest, that's what truly awoken people up in, caused the awakening of people in the North, right. you know, predominantly white people,
right.
who looked at what was happening and were horrified by what was happening.
Yeah.
And then the changes were made.
Right.
And, you know, I just think that in today's, at this point in time, nobody wants to do that anymore. Nobody wants to have change take place over a gradually. They just want it now.
Right.
And they think that by doing what's going on now, that perhaps that is going to cause change. And it will cause some change. But it's not the way that ensures long-term acceptance of that change, because in order to have change, you have to have a change of heart, and you don't get change of heart by threatening people.
Right.
Get change of heart by talking to people and having them understand you, and then seeing your point and having an epiphany. And when you have that epiphany, you change the way you actually believe and look at things, and that's what facilitates long-term change. And that's what I'm afraid of now, is that the longer that the violence and the total, the absolute total rejection of any civility in most cases is very disheartening.
Right. And so, first of all, you can see how when you have those helmets and those shields, then it looks like your police are part of that violence and everything. But your explanation of that, where it's basically as self-protection, but it's so interesting. If people don't talk, then they don't understand what your motivation was and what your police department, what their perspective was. And so you have created a city council for people to come together in your town. Can you tell us about that so that people can understand different perspectives and how everybody really isn't as different as they think they are?
Well, and one of the ways to do that is to, again, bring people together in a non-threatening environment and bring people together who have different perspectives. So if you know, I want to bring, I have a couple of people that I already have spoken to about this. And my goal is to start a council of sorts of people from the Sanford community who will come together. And the primary reason for this is that I want people to be able to come down and talk. So I would like people who really haven't had a lot of experience interacting with black people to talk to a black person mm-hmm. and listen to what they have to say mm-hmm. and get an idea of where they're coming from in that respect. And then I would like the black people to listen to what the white people may have to say mm-hmm. to, you know, regarding their concerns and their fears and a lot of it is going to be a true understanding of what people are saying and sometimes why they feel in most cases in the African American community, that, that the police seem to always be against them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like the police are protecting them, when in reality, we do protect African American communities all over the country. And you know, 95% of all police officers are good people, and they don't brutalize anyone. But it's those bad acts, those bad actors. And now it's not even bad acts and bad actors. It's anytime violence is used, people are really using every single incident as a catalyst for more outrage.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but, you know, some and most actually police uses of force are appropriate. And God forbid if we have to use deadly force. I don't know a single person who would enjoy the fact of using deadly force against anyone. And, you know, I just cringe sometimes when I think about it, because I know the kind of angst that using deadly force can cause. And, you know, but it just seems like you can't win now, that every single incident that occurs now is just throwing more accelerant on the fire. And nobody is even willing to stop for a minute and say, okay, can we at least get the actual facts of what happened? You know, can we truly know what the circumstances were? This is not like the George Floyd incident where somebody kneeled on a man's neck for 10 minutes and listened to him state that he couldn't breathe and refused to let him sit up.
Right.
You know, these are acts that occur over, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 seconds where something happens and you either have to react or not react. And at least let the facts come out so that you'll know what really happened. But I understand. So when you look at what happened in Sanford and you look at people who were protesting, I wouldn't describe it as peaceful. I would describe it as nonviolence, because there was a lot of anger. There was a lot of rhetoric. There was a lot of screaming. There was a lot of yelling, but it was not violent. And that's, you know, our job is we have to accept that, you know. I mean, it's not, you know, it goes against the common courtesies of one person to another. But we as police accept that. And we did accept it. And we didn't raise a finger or do anything that was offensive at all. But I just had to make sure that my officers were protected just in case somebody tried to provoke something. And you know, and a frozen water bottle thrown and hitting you in the head can seriously hurt you.
Yeah, it's like a rock.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's good. But then, you know, I understand helmets and shields. I do understand that if there's a march coming your way and the news shows that in some cities people have become violent against police departments. But this whole upgrading of militarizing the police force, that is really seriously worrisome. What can you tell us about that? What do you know about that? Is it happening in Sanford?
Well, it's happening everywhere in the profession. And, you know, that is a problem. And I'm one of the police chiefs and one of the people that I'm not a big favor of militarization of police. Now, that depends on what the militarization entails. Now, Sanford has an armored vehicle. We got it from the federal government. And we have that because we're also the lead agency in the Southern Maine Special Response Team, which is a regional SWAT team that responds out to situations that require special weapons and tactics, which is what SWAT means. And sometimes that includes having to go into a zone or an area that's controlled by somebody with a firearm. And sometimes that entails having to get in and rescue people who are in an area controlled by a person with a firearm. So we have our armored vehicle for that. And that's the only time we use it. If you remember down in Missouri, they had the issue on the first night of the protest down there where the police had the armored vehicle right up front on Main Street, meeting the people who were marching.
Right.
And that's not an appropriate way to use an armored vehicle.
Right.
That was inappropriate. That should have been, you know, parked somewhere way away, available if necessary, but not visible.
Right.
And I think in the last 20 years, one of the things that's happened in policing is that a lot of agencies now are going toward the more military look in uniforms and equipment. And while I realize that in some places officers may need the extra equipment, and the uniforms are just uniforms. I mean, they're usually just less expensive. They're more adaptable to the job you use. But the equipment is sometimes what bothers me, is that we see a lot of officers now that are wearing these big, heavy, out-of-body armor carriers with all kinds of equipment on them.
Right.
And, you know, that does present a threatening look. And I'm not about that. You know, police are not soldiers, and soldiers are not the police.
Right.
And I think that we need to, you know, that's one of the issues I think that's going to come out now, and probably appropriately, that a lot of police departments have really, you know, gone way toward the military side. And I'm not a big fan of that.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's the image that we want to portray to people. You know, in my earlier years when I policed in down in metropolitan Washington, D.C. area, we didn't use or carry that much equipment on patrol normally. And we did okay. But I do understand that nowadays things have changed, that unfortunately bad guys are more violent. You are much more apt to be shot at or severely injured doing this job now than you were 25 or 30 years ago. And, you know, practices and equipment usually adapt to what's going on in the world. So that's basically where we are now. And I think it's I've heard it mentioned a couple of times now in some of the things that are being said, that the police are over militarized. And I would agree with that somewhat. Not 100%, because again, in certain situations, you do perhaps need that militaristic approach, but not all the time. And I think so that's one of the issues that needs to be looked at, is what's the image that we're going to portray to people? And that image has got to be professional and non-threatening, at the same time, protecting the officers from the possibility of serious assault or death. So there is a compromise that can be met there somewhere.
Right. But it's interesting. I mean, which is coming first, the chicken or the egg, you know, the militarization and then the violent response from people? Or, you know, it's just like, how do we even parse that out for the truth of those situations? I know it's not an issue in your town, but how do people think about that, you know, and not think, okay, this is out of hand and it's not going to get better before it gets worse, is what it makes sense that people would be concluding. What do you think about that?
Well, I think what you have here is you just have a situation that that was precipitated by an event that was obviously wrong.
Yeah.
You know, and then it went to a situation that was taken advantage of by people. And I hate to use the word anarchist, but, you know, that's basically what they do. They're out there to destroy things and break down society. And they're using what's going on as a tool to accomplish what they want to accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be able to see that there are two totally different agendas here. You know, the agenda of people legitimately looking at the way that some police departments treat African-Americans is legitimate and needs to be talked about. We need to all, you know, understand and agree that even if you're not aware, that you probably have some bias within you that causes you to treat people differently, and you may not even realize that you're doing
this. Of course.
You know, that is entirely possible. I mean, I have a master's degree in psychology, so I understand that and I know that to be true. The problem is that most people don't want to be told that they have biases, that their biases may cause them to treat people differently because of who they are, and that when you treat people differently or you treat people in a manner that is disadvantageous or causes them grief because of the color of their skin, then that is a definition of racism. So you have to be able to look at that and say, gee, you know, I have to make sure that, you know, I'm not doing that, or I have to recognize that it's there and find out why is it there and what can I do as a person to make it go away. And the only way you get there is by talking to people and realizing that, you know, I didn't think that, or I didn't know that, or I didn't know you felt that way. And now I do. So maybe now I can change the way I think and prevent issues from happening in the future. So that's the goal of the council. The council is to bring people together to talk, and also to let people ask questions about the police department in Sanford. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they can ask questions about why we do things, because a lot of people don't know why we do things the way we do things.
Exactly.
And there's good reasons for most of the stuff we do. I'm not talking about the bad stuff.
Right.
I'm talking about the good stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand procedure, and they don't know why, quote unquote, well, the officer wouldn't listen to my side of the story and they gave me a ticket, or the officer, arrested my friend and he didn't do anything, and they don't understand why someone got arrested. So there's a lot of that the council can do. And my goal is that when you talk about these issues, whatever they may be, the people who are there talking are then going to leave the meeting and they're going to tell their friends and they're going to pass the information on. And hopefully through, I guess, osmosis, you will get more and more people aware of what's happening, and the understanding of people who are different than you. And, you know, my goal is to, you know, to start with 10, and then that 10 will tell 10, and that'll be 100, and then that 100 will tell 10, and that will be 1,000.
Yeah.
And that's the way you get information out there, and that's the way you get people to see things reasonably.
Yeah.
And so that's my goal. My goal is to be able to bring people together. And, you know, we can different people at different times will be in the group. I mean, it's not going to be the same people for the entire time. I would think every couple of years would have to change the makeup of the council. But I think it's something that could be used to benefit a lot of the issues we're seeing now, not only with having people who are different from each other talk to each other and, you know, let people know who they are. And this goes for instance, for the LGBTQ community. This goes for any group or person who lives in the city who feels as if they're not treated well, or they're treated differently because of who they are, what color they are, what ethnicity they are, or what religion they are.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm trying to go with that. And we're going to start those meetings hopefully sometime this month. I have probably about 5 or 6 people who have already volunteered, and I'm going to advertise it. And I'm sure I will get a lot more people who would like to be part of this.
I mean, that is so, so important and so positive and so right. I mean, how else are we going to know about each other unless we communicate and talk and listen and talk? Yeah. And share our thoughts and get acknowledged by the other people. I mean, just mountains of barriers can be evaporated with are you going to kind of be the person that moderates the whole thing so that rules and conversations stay, you know, mutually respectful? Do you have any concept of how that's going to work?
Well, I mean, the rules will basically be that, you know, we're here to talk. We're here to educate each other. We're not here to argue. We're not here to yell at each other.
Yeah.
We're not here to make accusations. We're here to listen to what people say and hopefully hear something that we didn't know. and also to tell people. I mean, you know, the way I think one way that we can look at it is an example for me personally. And when I talk about epiphany and a change of heart, is that, you know, through my life, I was always accepting of gay people. I mean, I never, I guess you could just probably say it was like ambivalent. I really had, you know, no opinion one way or the other. It was just, okay, so you're gay. That's fine with me. I don't care. And that's the way I kind of acted for a lot of years until, you know, a member of my family came out as being gay. And then I realized that, you know, well, wait a minute now. Now, being neutral is no good anymore. Because now I have to, you know, be an advocate and not just say, well, gee, you know, it's okay with me. I don't have an opinion one way or the other. Now I have to actually step up and be an advocate for, you know, for gay people, because I now have some, you know, I have some skin in the game, you know, someone that I know, and I would never want, you know, that person to be hurt or targeted because he's gay. So now I have to make sure and go out there. And when I'm in a situation and I hear somebody say something, you know, something derogatory about gay people, I'll say something to them. You know, if I see somebody that's going to bother somebody who's gay, I'll interject myself into it because I feel that that's what you have to do. And of course, I would also do that. And I have done that in situations where people have said things of, you know, of a disparaging nature about Black people or Indian people or Asian people. I mean, you know, I just believe that just standing there and turning your head is not good enough, that you have to stand up.
It's compliance. It's actually compliance.
Yeah, you need to, you know, so and that's, I think that that's where a lot of people are uncomfortable, because a lot of people are afraid, you know, and they don't want to get involved because they see what happens. And I'm not saying that we need to get into fights with people. I most certainly don't want that to happen. But I think that for every person that you correct and say, hey, you know, don't say that. That's wrong. You know, you should never say that. That person's a human being and deserves to be treated with dignity. And, you know, how would you like it if someone were to treat a member of your family that way? And, you know, a lot of times, I'd, you know, say maybe 70-80% of the time, it has some effect. But I don't want people to, you know, go out and start fist fights with people over.
Of course not.
You know, but I do think that that's what we, that's what needs to be done. And that's one of the things that people can hear, is they can hear someone say, well, here's what my life looks like. You know, here's what's happened to me. And get people to say, wow, I didn't know that. Or to legitimately, you know, understand what it's like to have someone treat you differently because of your race, or treat you differently or badly because of your sexual orientation. You know, so that's basically, it's not complicated. It's nothing new.
It isn't.
Other places have done it.
Yep. It isn't. Tell me about your police officers. What, how do they relate to you and your philosophies and your approaches, and are they on board, and do they acknowledge their biases, and what do they do when you have conversations about this, or propose this council that you want to have? What kind of buy-in are you getting in your police department?
Well, I haven't really polled anybody formally yet. This is what I can say, is that what I'm saying to you now and the things that I'm doing, this is the way that I have, you know, policed, and also the way that I've been a manager, supervisor, and a manager and a leader, is I'm very big on treating people kindly. As a matter of fact, you know, one of our I'm trying to think which one it was. It's not our mission statement, but in our code of conduct, essentially, is that we treat all people with dignity and respect, even those who are marginalized, such as people that suffer from addiction, or, you know, people who suffer from mental illness, that everybody deserves the right as a human being to be treated well. And I'm constantly telling people that. I'm one of these people that when I look and I read a journal and I read all the major journals in law enforcement, if I see something that that impresses me, that I think that's important, I'll send that out to all my people and I'll tell them, you need to read this. And, you know, this is what we should be doing. And this is how we should look at this. I mean, I throw that stuff in all the time. You know, I just recently received a letter from one of my officer about one of my officers from a person with disability who the officer just arbitrarily randomly stopped and helped him out. And quite frankly, the officer didn't have to do it. I mean, it wasn't anything required. It was somebody struggling, trying to carry some things, and the officer stopped and carried the things to his house, and then you know, talked to him and asked him if he needed anything else. And the man wrote me a letter. And as I was writing a letter back to him and going to write a note to the officer. And I, you know, I mean, I know people are going to think this is corny and goofy, but, you know, I thought about, I'm Catholic, and I thought about the corporal acts of mercy, which is feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, clothe the naked, house the homeless, you know, visit the sick. I'll take care of the sick and visit the sick and visit people who are imprisoned. And, you know, that was said about 2,000 years ago, and it's still effective today. So I actually sent that out to my people the other day. And I said, you know, so here, you know, here are some things when you talk about, you know, being mercy, because, you know, if you have compassion, having compassion is not enough. You have to have compassion with action.
Right.
So, you know, so I said, I gave examples. I said, you know, feed the hungry, you know. Now that doesn't mean you have to go buy people food, although I know my people have done that many times that I know about, and probably 100 times more than I know, but more than maybe direct them toward where they can get to a food bank, or they can get to a program that provides a meal or two a week. You know, clothing people who need clothing, especially in the winter. You know, I mean, just making sure that, you know, if someone, you know, needs a pair of gloves, you know, maybe you could help them out, or a ski cap. And we do a lot of that around Christmas time, as we provide socks and gloves and hats and toiletries to people who may be homeless because they don't have access to them. You know, taking care of the sick, you know, and what that means is if you see someone who is sick, maybe suffering from addiction, talk to them and try to get them into treatment, you know, offer to be an advocate for them. And if someone has is suffering from a mental illness, then if necessary, take them to the hospital and see if you can get them some help. Don't let them die on the street or hurt themselves. So, you know, those are examples of things that I think my officers do on a regular basis, but it never hurts to remind people. Because unfortunately, those things like that can, you know, tend to wane. You know, and especially now, because with all the rhetoric on the news about how bad the police are, defund the police. I mean, you know, that hurts me personally. But I know it also hurts all of my officers. So in closing in that, my belief is that just like every other police department and every other human being, everybody harbors what may be, they may not even realize that they harbor implicit bias. They may not think that they have, you know, that they may look at a black person a little bit differently than they look at a white person, or they may look at a gay person and think of them differently than a non-gay person. And you've got to be able to admit that. You've got to be able to say, I've got to kind of change the way I think here. Even if I never have harmed anyone, even if I never will harm anyone, I still have to acknowledge that. And that's something that has to happen, not just in policing, but in everything. But policing is probably the most visible arm of that, because if someone is policing on a with racial bias, then you are going to hurt people of different races. And unfortunately, there are some people in policing who do that. And those people have to be identified. They have to be terminated. They shouldn't be allowed to be police officers anymore if that becomes evident that you can show that they are biased and they do treat people badly because of that bias.
Yeah.
And we just need to, talk more. We need to talk.
Yeah.
People need to hear that.
Yeah.
They need to be told, basically, on a regular basis, be kind to people.
Yeah.
Treat people well.
Okay, first of all, I don't think that's corny, and I'm so glad you shared all of those thoughts with us. I mean, that is so, it's like such a relief to know that there's one police chief at least who has that high level of values. Do you know of other police chiefs that that are in that level of thinking, that those kinds of values and those kinds of practical feet on the ground, how you interact with the people that you're supposed to be protecting and serving? Do you know of other police chiefs who think like you?
Well, I'm sure that the answer to that question is I've not sat down with anyone and had that type of conversation with another police chief, but I'm sure that most of the people that I know in this state who are leaders in the agencies are good people. And I think that is the beginning of this all, is that you have to be a good person.
Yeah.
You have to want to treat people well.
Right.
And therefore, if you think like that, then when something happens and you can step back and say, oh, wow, that wasn't right. And you can recognize it. And so I'm sure that most all police chiefs probably strive for that. I can't actually say that I've sat down with any of them and had a heart-to-heart conversation.
Yeah.
But I think that you can probably tell, I think, because you'll be able to look at the at the complaints that are coming in and look at the different factors in the community, and you'd probably be able to figure that out, that if you have an agency that is doing bad things, then more than likely they have a command that either is turning their head or encouraging for bad things to happen. And the example of that is, and I'm not beating up on the LAPD, but the LAPD Rampart scandal, where when the investigation of that came out, it basically showed that, the upper management of that particular division knew and was actually encouraging. Mm. So, for instance, if all you do is go tell your people, arrest, arrest, arrest,
right,
guns, guns, guns,
yep,
gangs, 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 drugs, 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 then if you're putting a lot of pressure on your people to go out and get results,
right,
then people are going to do what they have to do to comply.
Right.
And if that means they have to break the rules to make an arrest, then some people are going to break the rules. And that's what happens. That's what happens when you try to push people. My thing about policing is go out and work in the community. If you see a bad guy, lock him up. If you know something bad is happening, investigate it and figure out how you can stop it. But, we don't do quotas. We don't have a number of arrests that you have to make. We don't have a number of citations that you have to write.
Mm.
I mean, a good officer will go out and I don't imagine that any good police officer could go out and not see somebody doing something bad a couple of times a shift. Because that's what people do. People go out and they drive badly, they act badly, they steal. But your general consensus of what you are telling your people is that I want you to go out and I want you to be decent and nice to people and help them. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, then you are going to have a high degree of satisfaction from the community, because the community will know that. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the ways I think you can gauge it. If you looked at the number of complaints, if you look at what people are saying, you'll have a pretty good idea about what the leadership of an agency is.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably public information, is it? I would imagine.
Well, yes, you could. I'm sure a lot of it is public information. But just like everything else, when you're dealing with the government, getting information out of the government is really hard sometimes.
And what happens in your, can I talk to you for a little while longer? Is it all right?
Yes, okay. That's fine.
Okay, good. What happens when you get a complaint, someone calls in or writes in with a complaint? What? How do you handle it? How does your police department handle it?
Well, that's one of the things I did when I first got here was I revamped the citizen complaint procedure. And the way it works for our agency now is that anyone who comes in or complains about anything, and that also includes people who in the past, you know, I mean, back 20, 25 years ago, if somebody walked into the police department and they were drunk and they said, I want to report something, you know, and they're obviously, in, you know, highly intoxicated, you'd basically tell them, go home, sober up, and come back when you're not drunk.
Right.
Well, the problem with that is that if that person who's intoxicated wants to report something that one of your officers did that was pretty bad, you need to get the information initially.
Right.
And then if they want to come back later and follow up and do an interview, they can. So basically every person who comes in here, there is a what we call a formalized procedure. And it is the first step is what we call a complaint checklist. And if you take a call on the phone or someone walks in the lobby or if someone calls dispatch, then a case number is assigned to the complaint itself. So there'll be a record of it. And then a form is done. And that form has the person's name, address, telephone number, and the nature of the complaint. And then that form is immediately given to the working supervisor who has to call that person back immediately and talk to them on the phone. The supervisors have the ability to resolve some of the things at this level. If it's a, if someone is mad because they got a citation and you explain to them that, well, you know, what to do is go to court and tell a judge what happened. And, you know, the judge may very well believe you and find you not guilty. But that's procedure. You know, the officer saw you doing this, in Maine, for instance, talking on your cell phone while you're driving is a biggie. People don't like to be charged with that. Things like that happen. And the other thing we do is that we have a citizen complaint form, which is a more formalized process. And if someone is not satisfied, then they're given a complaint form to fill out. And the complaint form is a little more detailed. And then every complaint form that we get, we do a formal investigation. And a formal investigation in some cases could be just a review of all of the records and the facts of the case, or an actual investigation where the victim or the complainant and the officers are formally interviewed and evidence is collected. And then at the end of it, if it's a formal complaint, then the citizen has written a letter and knows that either the complaint was investigated and it was not sustained or that the appropriate disciplinary action was taken. And we don't tell them what we did, but they can, they'll know that. So that's the way it works here. And it's worked very well. Now, in some cases, if someone calls up and they're not able to fill out a complaint form, a citizen complaint form, then we'll take the information over the phone and we'll still do an investigation if the allegation is serious. And to me, serious is, anytime you tell me that an officer did something wrong, then that's serious. And we will at least do the preliminary investigation into that. And, you know, a lot of times people make complaints and one of the things they want is just to hear that you'll tell the officer the way I feel. And that's something that I'm big on, you know, is that if you come in and you tell me, well, I'm really upset because he didn't understand the way I felt and he made me feel very badly. And I'll tell you, well, you know what I will do? I will go to that officer and I will tell that officer how you feel, how you felt. Now, I'm not going to discipline him for that because a lot of times someone will feel that an officer was rude, but they're not actually rude. That just maybe they didn't react the way that the person wanted them to react.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot because you're under stress. You've got stopped on traffic. You're going to get a citation. You're not very happy.
Right.
So if an officer doesn't, engage in conversation with you, or if the officer is just about business, a lot of times you'll say, well, he was rude.
Yeah.
Well, that's not rude. And I will tell him how you felt, though. And when I say that, I do it.
Yeah,
so
I believe you.
They know. But I mean, you know, so, and I'm very fortunate is that I've been here for 13 years, and I've had a lot of complaints made. A lot of them were non-sustained because they're basically a matter of not understanding police procedure, and people allege that you didn't do your job, but you did your job. You just don't understand the way we have to do it. Mm. And on occasions when the officer did do something wrong, they get disciplined. And, you know, I think I'm not unlike any other police department where, you know, if you're out there doing your job, you're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
And mistakes are okay. Now, some mistakes have consequences, but that's okay because it's just a mistake. It's not you. You didn't intentionally go out and do something nasty to someone.
Right.
So, you know, as I tell people, you know, some mistakes have consequences and you may receive some disciplinary action on this, but it doesn't mean that the officer is a bad person. It just means they made a mistake.
Well, and the stress, I just can't even imagine the stress that comes with that job. I don't understand why would a person want to be a policeman? It just seems so, I mean, I appreciate that you do, but it just seems so stressful. What draws you to that career, that profession?
Well, you know, I guess it just depends on the individual. I've always thought, and I always look for this when I hire people, and I do believe it still to this day, that if you really want to make policing your career, that you really have to like catching bad guys. You know, if you're not if you don't do this job because you want to go out there and you want to catch someone that did a bad thing, then you probably shouldn't be the police, you know? Because that's what it's all about. You know, someone's house gets burglarized, you know, someone is, you know, injured by someone doing something wrong, you know, someone driving badly causes an accident and someone gets hurt. You know, you have to want to go out there and catch bad guys and hold them accountable. And then some of the job is about that, you know, you're not sitting behind a desk Monday through Friday, that you're out there and there's always something different happening.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it is exciting. Most of it is terribly boring, but sometimes it's exciting. And you have to want to talk to people because that's what 90% of policing is talking to people.
Mm.
One of the things that I learned, you know, 40 years ago when I was a real police officer down in Metropolitan in the Maryland, D.C. area, is not to be afraid to say you're sorry. Mm. So a lot of police used to think that you can never say the S word because if you say you're sorry, you admitted you did something wrong.
Mm.
But sometimes, you know, and an example of that would be, you know, you get a lookout for a robbery and the lookout is for a man with a red shirt and a purple hat. And in the area of this robbery, 5 minutes later, you see a man in a red shirt and a purple hat and you stop him. And the information you have is that person robbed a store with a gun. So you have to assume that he could have a gun.
Mm.
So you stop him, you put him in a position to disadvantage, you may handcuff him. And then through investigation, you find out that it wasn't this guy in a red shirt with a purple hat that did the robbery. So you let him go. Well, I've always been of the thoughts that you could say, hey, man, I'm sorry that you were inconvenienced. I'm sorry that you got stopped.
Mm.
But here's the deal. Here's what I had. Here's what I did. It wasn't you. And I know you're pissed, but I'm sorry.
Mm.
And, you know, a lot of times that makes people feel a little bit better, you know, because you acknowledge them. Now, you know, it's not going to probably make them feel all the way better. But at least you have said that you're sorry that you, you know, that they were inconvenienced and hopefully they didn't get hurt, I hope. And, you know, that was my experience that I've never been afraid to tell people that, you know, gee, I'm sorry if you feel as if we didn't do the right thing, but we did what we had to do.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh. And when someone wants a job with you, what are you looking for?
Well, I like people that have, you know, that have had some life experience mainly. You know, someone that, you know, I mean, I've had people apply to my department that have had master's degrees or 22 years old and had never really had a job in their life, except maybe a waitress during the summer or a waiter or something during the summer. You know, I like people with some life experience. I like people that have suffered some adversity in their life. You know, that
for the compassion element. Or?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, the one way to have compassion is to be able to relate to what's going on with people.
Right.
I like people that have had jobs, you know, that have had a full time job for a couple of years. I like people who went to college, and I don't care whether you have a degree in fashion design or law enforcement. If you went to 4-year college or even a 2-year program, you still studied, you still showed, you know, you've read books, you've written papers, you've expanded your knowledge base. I think that's important. But more importantly, when I interview people, I don't talk about police stuff. I don't ask them, well, what would you do if you saw somebody do this? Or what would you do if you saw somebody do that? I ask them, what do you do for fun? You know, and then if they say, well, I play golf, I'll say, well, I love golf. I love hitting golf balls, you know, and get them talking. Because when they start talking and they relax, then who they are will come to the surface eventually. Even someone who's very guarded, you know, who doesn't want to, you know, is trying to, you know, maybe hide something. If you get them talking and you get them relaxed, then you can get a good judge on what they're like. And I'm looking for people that want to come and treat people well. You know, I'm looking for people that want to go out and catch bad people who do bad things. I'm looking for people that won't harass people. You know, I'm looking for people that can work with you know, a diverse group of people and do it well. And now, you know, we do the best we can to screen out people who are not like that, but it's not a perfect science. And sometimes you've hired people who really shouldn't be police officers. And when you do that, then you have got to have the ability and the determination to get rid of them.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be willing to say this job is not for you. You're not doing what I want you to do. And, you know, and if they, and of course with the, that's one of the issues sometimes with union jobs, is that sometimes unions make it a little more difficult to get rid of people who maybe shouldn't be the police.
Yeah.
But there's a procedure in place and you have to follow the procedure. And if someone is truly a bad police officer, they won't be able to hide that very long. And if you're doing your job, you should be able to put together information that would indicate that they shouldn't be a police officer any longer.
Yeah. Has that happened for you? How many times, if it has?
I've had to, I've terminated a few people here, you know, for various reasons. I've disciplined a lot of people. I mean, you know, sometimes minor, sometimes not so minor discipline. But I think I hope that I'm fair. And I'm also understanding, because I did the job. I was a good cop when I was a real police officer. And, you know, I went out and I policed in an area that was probably 95% African-American. Uh-huh. So I've been saving Black lives since 1982. Uh-huh. And I've worked in the Black community. And I recognize the same thing in the Black community, that the people I police, that 97% of them were good people just trying to get by.
Of course.
Just trying to go to work, live, and raise a family. And the 3 or 4% of the population were bad people. And they were bad guys, and they needed to be hopefully caught at some point. But, you know, I mean, I really look at that as not only, you know, do I believe that all lives matter, but I have, you know, put my life on the line for Black lives. And, you know, I would do it again today. That's what I do. You know, I put myself in jeopardy because it's my job to protect people from bad stuff. And hopefully at my age, I won't get my butt kicked or something, but that's what I do. And I'm out on the road on occasion, and I listen to what's going on, and I will respond to a call with people if I'm out on the road. And that's because even at this age and after 40 years, I still want to catch bad guys.
You are amazing. I love talking to you. I just have so glad I got to have this conversation and that I get to share it with others. Is there anything else that you want to share with us?
No. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Yeah.
I think this is one of the ways, now I know that a lot of people are going to listen to this and they're going to say, yeah, right, sure. Yep. That's just, paying lip service to the issue, right. And, you know, you're not admitting that, that all police officers hate all black people and that's the issue and all that. And, you know, to them, what I would say to them is call me up and talk to me or send me an email. Or if you live in the area, you know, let's get together and I'll buy you a cup of coffee and we'll talk, because there's nothing that I have said that I can't back up with facts, with truth, with examples. Yeah. And that's just who I am. You know, I mean, but I know there are people out there who will do that. But I also hope there are people out there who will listen to this and maybe believe that there are people out there that I believe in what I say and I put it into action. But there are also other people, and that, you know, I do not know, honestly, a police officer that right now in this particular time and sphere that I'm in now, that would go out and intentionally hurt someone because of their race, ethnicity, sexual orientation.
Yeah.
And I truly hope that I don't have anyone who would do that at some point in time. And if someone who worked for me did do that, then I would do everything I could do to issue the appropriate discipline up and including termination if the act that was committed was serious enough.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, but I guess that's, you know, I'm hoping that, I always say that if you can change the mind of just 1% of people, then you have a big victory.
It's true.
1% of the people who listen to this change their minds or believe me, then that's very good. That's good. Because if you just change one person's mind, it's good. But if you change several people's minds, it's even better. And so maybe that will happen. You know, maybe there'll be someone who'll listen to this and say, maybe all police don't think this way. And, you know, and maybe he is correct. And, we'll go on from there.
I just wish more police could hear this. So, yeah.
Well, they will.
Yeah.
It'll get around. Good. And people will see. Good. It. And a lot of people will criticize me. And, a lot of people will say that my view, for instance, on the police being military looking is that I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
That, we need that because the world is so violent nowadays. A lot of people will say that if I'm full of baloney about what I feel about how officers are supposed to act. But like I said, I mean, anything that I've said here, I can support, and I'm willing to talk about it. And, I hope that this, has some positive effect.
I hope so, too.
And that it does make a difference.
Yeah.
And if it makes a difference in just a few people, then that's a victory.
Good. Good. Can I put your email address in the show's notes?
I'd rather they write me a letter because, the only thing about email that really bothers me is that I could get creamed with about 5,000 of them.
Got it. I'm glad I asked. Okay, because you mentioned send me an email. I think you said that, but so I'm glad I cleared that up. Okay, so I'll just put your...
Well, I mean, people in the area here can send me emails. I mean, if somebody in California listens to this and they want to, they want to troll me, I don't want to be getting 5,000 emails from people who are, throwing rocks and bottles and Molotov cocktails at businesses to start writing me, because then they'll crash the server.
Got it. So, got it.
But I will. But I mean, if someone around here, if someone from Portland or Boston or Augusta or, you know, in my city.
Good.
Listens to this and said, Bull, I don't believe you. Well, then come see me and we'll talk.
Fabulous. Fabulous. So, it's been an honor, Chief. It's been an honor.
Well, it's been very nice speaking to you. I mean, I like to talk.
And, you do.
And, you know, I think that that's one of the only ways that you can make any change is to just talk and just tell the way you feel. And, you know, and hopefully my counsel will have some effect, and hopefully we'll you know, be able to assuage some of the concerns of the people in our community who feel that the police are not fair to them. And, you know, a little bit at a time, you know, always be moving in the positive.
Exactly.
And eventually the changes will happen.
Exactly.
And good things will come of it.
Yes. Maybe I'll get back in touch with you in like 6 months or something and see how the council's going. How would that be?
That would be fine.
Okay. Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And you take care. It was nice speaking.
All right. You too, Chief. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Did you get the impression that Chief Connolly is 100% sincere about his commitment to the value of engaging in productive, mutually respectful town council meetings? There isn't any doubt in my mind that if anyone can create constructive outcomes amongst diverse factions, he really is one of those people. I'm definitely planning on reaching out to him again in about 6 months to learn what progress has been realized with the meetings that he's been planning. If you have questions or suggestions for different topics, different people you'd like me to invite onto this podcast, I hope you'll let me know. Again, the best way to reach me is on the One White Woman Podcast Facebook page. Thank you for being here. We have so much learning and growing to do, and it really is on us white people to wake up to the countless ways in which systems throughout our country's culture are and have always been disproportionately advantageous to whites. In future episodes, I plan to share with you some of the important books I've been reading, which will include insights from some of the best minds that are focusing on the multi-leveled challenges of racism in our country. No matter how much we know and feel the truth that Black Lives Matter, none of us with light skin can possibly comprehend the hard realities of living in this country as a non-white. And so learning from African Americans and other people of color so that we can take in those realities on deeper and deeper levels is the purpose of this podcast. I hope you'll stay with me so we can learn and grow together. Thank you for being here. And thank you again to Chief Connolly for taking the time to really give us his perspective on what needs to happen throughout our country to build the kind of country that we all want to live in together. Okay, thank you.